Welcome, welcome. Yes, here we are. Again, a live broadcast. If you are listening on this Monday, September the 19th, in the year of our Lord 2016, I'm Pastor Tom Baker. I'm all by myself today. Tuesday, Pastor Mark Smith will be here. Thursday, Wes Reimnitz. We may not be here on Wednesday. There is a very interesting seminar at the seminary to which I have paid to get into, talking about the confirmation today practices of catechetical instruction. So I'm kind of interested in hearing what they have to say, so I'll be there. Probably will be here tomorrow, though, but not Wednesday. We promised that today we were going to talk about the qualifications of a pastor. We had had an email that we addressed where someone was asking what use of the law should pastors be using in a sermon. And the first use is, of course, for the government, how to keep people from disobeying outwardly the laws of the land. The second use, and the third, is for the church. The second, showing people that they are sinners in need of a Savior. And the third, giving information once you are a Christian as to what the will of God is. I indicated I hardly ever preach the third use of the law because most congregations are filled with Christians who pretty well know what the law is. We don't need to inform them, but we do use it in the second use in showing that we fail to observe it perfectly. And that's why the need of the gospel. But today I said we would talk about what are the qualifications for a pastor. And we're taking this right out of 1 Timothy chapter 3, where the Apostle Paul says, if anyone aspires to the office of overseer, he desires a noble task. Now, that office of overseer is also known as the pastor. The pastor desires a noble task. This is important to understand because the emphasis is on the word task. And if you look at other parts of the Bible, what is the task of the church? Not only to talk about Jesus Christ and salvation through him, but also to show love to others. And so Paul really talks about, therefore, the requirements of a pastor, the first one being he must be above reproach. Then he says the husband of one wife, sober-minded, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not a drunkard, not violent but gentle, not quarrelsome, not a lover of money. So I take a look at that and I'm trying to figure out how I ever became a pastor. Well, no, not quite, but pretty close. He must be above reproach. What does that mean? He needs to have a good kind of understanding on the part of the people, a good reputation. For example, and I'm going to give you those kinds of situations that have come up in my ministry. I knew one congregation that was calling a pastor, and they were kind of excited to get him, and he came and visited them. And then he announced that he doesn't do visitation, neither for shut-ins or for people in the hospital. He expected the elders to do that. Now, he lost his reputation immediately. That is the task of a pastor, to make those visitations, because pastors can say things. We're trained in the scriptures to say things that deal specifically with the comfort needed for those who are shut-ins, those in the hospital. So a pastor who says, I'm not going to do any visitation, and has his leaders in the congregation do the visitation, In my opinion, that is not a pastor who is above reproach. Now, the husband of one wife. Does that mean, first of all, that he has to have a wife? No. No, single men were certainly allowed to become a pastor. Remember, Timothy was. But they came out of a culture, and this is important, where there was polygamy, sexual immorality, and therefore sexual fidelity was recognized as important in a monogamous marital relationship. When did it come about in the Roman Catholic Church that they forbid the marriage of priests? That actually occurred in about 1130 in Germany. And they were actually violently forced to lead a single life. When the Archbishop of Mainz published the Pope's decree about celibacy, he was almost killed in a riot by enraged priests. Now, I don't know what we as pastors would do without our wives. I've said it many a time, and many other pastors have, that the wife can help the pastor do so much more. Not only because she's taking care of the household, is with the kids all the time, and this sort of thing, but there's somebody there to talk to discuss things. I don't understand how a priest who is celibate can be forced not to marry, particularly in light that they are to be the husband of one wife. That means not two wives or three wives. And that also doesn't mean that, for example, let's say a pastor has a wife who dies, well, he is permitted to remarry. So at any one time, he only has one wife. So it's not speaking about marrying a second woman after your first wife dies or something. He needs to be sober-minded, self-controlled. And how many stories can we tell you where pastors really get angry? Sometimes at their congregation. I've listened to some sermons. I remember going to one church. I was visiting it with a friend. And the pastor was blasting the congregation for not giving as much in missions as they had 20 years ago. So at the end, you know, the pastor is at the back of the church shaking hands with everybody. As I went by him, he did not know who I was. I said to him, I'm sorry that you are a pastor of such a terrible congregation. And he looked at me and he said, what do you mean by that? And I said, read your sermon again. You know, this is not the way. You could have children in your household and tell them, boy, you're not acting like your brother. Your brother is such a good son. What's the matter with you? You think that's going to be proper motivation for the second son to behave differently? No, he's just going to be angry, and he might be jealous of the first son, and he'll be out of control. Hospitable. Well, what does that mean? It wasn't at all unusual that people in Paul's day needed a place to stay. Paul didn't have a house that he was always going back to every night. So also with Jesus, many of the women in Jesus' life would take care of him, give him a place to stay, also something to eat. Being hospitable means that when somebody comes to the congregation who is a visitor and they are not Christian, it doesn't mean that we look at them and say, no, we don't want you back. You say instead, is there an opportunity we can talk to you with the possibility of being able to bring you into the church. You need to be hospitable and open to everybody in the congregation. The next one is one of my favorites, able to teach. Now, we need to be careful what that means. That doesn't mean that a pastor is only able to, like, for example, speak the catechism of Martin Luther and speak to the children about what Martin Luther says. No, he needs to apply what Martin Luther says in ways that the children can understand. For example, last week I was leaving the funeral home in preparation for a funeral and driving over to see the youth confirmands at Trinity Orchard Farm, and all of a sudden my right front tire blew up on the highway. I was able to get to a gas station, and my wife came, gave me her van, and then she drove back with the AAA guy who took it to Dobbs. And I was only 45 minutes late for the youth confirmation. Now, I use that as an example that when you're a Christian, things tend to work out. Yes, I was late, but we phoned the school. They said, no problem. We'll just postpone confirmation for 45 minutes later than usual. And I did spend the whole hour with them. And I was trying to give the children a sense of how I wasn't really bothered by anything. One young man said to me, but that's going to cost you money. And I said, no, it means that we're just going to have to change the priority of the money that we do have and fix the tire, get a new one so that I can, you know, use the car. I found out today that they have to order a part because something else broke and I won't be able to pick it up till Tuesday, but that's fine. God has given us a truck and a van so that we're using those. You see, the idea to teach, therefore, doesn't mean that by rote memory only these kids know everything. No, we still have memory, but I have the parents take care of that. My task is to teach the doctrines of the church so the children can understand them, using analogies and metaphors and true life experiences. And I like using videos. The next one is not a drunkard. Well, whoever heard of a pastor being a drunkard? Well, I did. In fact, I was involved in the closing of a church that had dwindled down to about nothing because the pastor was an alcoholic. And so he was removed from the roster, but the church still closed. Because when you have anything like alcohol or drugs or something, you cannot be an effective pastor. Not violent, but gentle. Not quarrelsome. I can't tell you how many times I've known of congregations where the quarrels come about not because of a difference in theology, but personality clashes. Yeah, there's no doubt there are some congregations where one or two families kind of run the congregation. And when I mean run it, it doesn't mean that they do a lot of work there, because we've got lots of people. I was at Emmanuel Olivet helping out for a few years, and now at Trinity Orchard Farm. There are definitely a number of families who do a lot of work there, but they don't run the church. Every time I was in a meeting and there was a difference of opinion, what would they do? They would talk about it until they came to a consensus as to what direction to go. And that often happens because of the leadership of the overseer or the pastor. He also should not be a lover of money. Wow. That's something that really is important. And every pastor gets tempted that way. I remember at one congregation I served, one of the shut-ins wanted to give me her house when she died. She would put it in the will. And I said, no, well, what you need to do is give it to the church, and therefore, if they want to sell it and I can afford it, I'll buy it. She wasn't very happy with me, and she ended up giving it to her niece instead. But I can understand that. Well, when we reject gifts from members that are quite expensive, we do so because we don't want to get the reputation that we're a lover of money. But boy, the devil can tempt us. I was visiting a shut-in once, and she indicated that she had some money that had come to her because of the dividends on her stocks. Could I take it and put it in the church? But she didn't want her relatives to know about it because they would be mad the church got the money rather than them. And so I was just to take it to the Board of Finance and give it to them, which just so happened to be the next day. And then she wouldn't even get a form saying she had given it. Well, I said, sure, we got no problem with that. And she took me to her closet and asked me to reach up, and there was a pillow. And I picked up the pillow, and it was kind of tied shut. So we had a prayer. I left her house, went to the church, and opened up the pillow. $22,000 in cash. Now, we lived right beside the church, so immediately I called my wife over, Louise. Because, I mean, the thought went through my mind. I'm a sinner. I could take all of that money, and nobody would know about it. Because we are to keep it a secret from everybody, even when we give to the Board of Finance. They wouldn't know that I received that money. But, of course, I did not do that. Called my wife over, we counted the money, and we had it all set for the Board of Finance, who counted on that morning, the next morning. And we gave them the money and told the treasurer who it was from, but not to make it public, and that the folks shouldn't send her anything about how much money it was and this sort of thing. So don't tell me that pastors aren't lovers of money. Of course, we like to have sufficient funds to take care of our debts, etc. But the devil can tempt us in ways that a pastor could really become important to people to such a degree. I remember I had 28 years at St. James Lutheran, and there were at least six shut-ins I could have gone to and asked for $5,000 or $10,000, and they willingly would have given me a check. To me, that's wrong. The next point, he must manage his own household well with all the dignity, keeping his children in submissive. For if someone does not know how to manage his own household, how will he care for God's church? When I was at the seminary, we had some very liberal seminary professors. Some of their children left the church. Others became homosexual. Others had children out of wedlock. I remember one in particular where the son actually murdered his wife. Now, once you know something like that, you just have a different understanding when the pastor speaks. In fact, I remember one pastor whose wife divorced him. And it wasn't his fault at all. He was a wonderful pastor and a professor. His wife divorced him. Why? Because she had a form of dementia and she didn't know what she was doing. But in this state, she was able to divorce him. the church did not remove him from the roster because of the grounds of the divorce were not his fault. But I remember you took a call to a congregation after that, and when people who were having marriage problems wanted to talk to a pastor, it wasn't unusual that they would call me rather than their own pastor. So even if they knew the circumstances of a divorce, a pastor who's had a divorce in some communities is just not regarded as someone who can properly give me advice concerning my marriage problems. That's what the Bible says. If someone does not know how to manage his own household, how will he care for God's church? I'll tell you this. Those of you who know me and my wife, Louise, if Louise ever divorced me, which will never happen, but if that ever happened, there is no way any of the congregations I attend would want me back. That's proper. He must not be a recent convert, or he may become puffed up with conceit and fall into the condemnation of the devil. You know, there are churches that make their pastors calling them when they're only 12 or 13 years old because they have the ability to speak well. These people do not know anything of any insights in regard to Christianity. But people are happy to have a pastor regardless of the age. And when someone isn't trained at the seminary, and they boast about it, like Joel Osteen, it doesn't take long in listening to him that he gives all the evidence that he hasn't been trained at a seminary. Because he really preaches psychology rather than theology. Now, the next one, verse 7, 1 Timothy chapter 3, he must be well thought of by outsiders, so that he may not fall into disgrace, into a snare of the devil. The pastor who was there for almost 30 years at Trinity Orchard Farm, he had a great reputation with folks in the community because he got himself involved in various items in the community, helping those who needed food or other kinds of help. And he would attend meetings and give his point of view. And he was a very gentle soul, so that even unbelievers would often say, "Where did Pastor Gaunt go?" Like I attended a place where I was doing some preaching at a nursing home, and they were all asking, "What happened to Pastor Gaunt?" And I had to explain that he took a call to another state and to a town where 11 of his grandchildren live. So he had that good reputation even among unbelievers. And so they were open to they were open to invite him to various items and various events to pray because of the good reputation. Excuse me, I'm just going to take a little drink of water. Okay. So what follows this, and we don't have time for this, are the qualifications for deacons. Deacons were people that we might call today's trustees or to a degree even elders. They cooperated with the pastor in handling the distribution of money for those in need. They also provided for the needs of the sick, and they also took care of the place of worship. We had at Trinity Orchard Farm a lightning storm that blew out the sound system, the video system, the piano, the phones, etc., and we're working with the insurance to restore them. And they just had a conversation on Sunday because all of a sudden, lots of big cracks, crackling noises were occurring through the sound system, the one that we've tried to replace it with. So all those who were in charge of that, which I would call the deacons, said, you know, we really got to get this fixed. And I'll tell you the other reason is because we take video of the service, and there were people who loved to have a video of our recent funeral we had, and also the baptism of an infant. So we still took care of that. I brought in my video camera, and we took photos of that. On tomorrow's Law and Gospel, we're going to be talking with Pastor Mark Smith with that tremendous hymn that is very comforting. So we ask you to be with us. I'm Tom Baker. Till tomorrow, God bless.
Listen to Law and Gospel each weekday at this time on Worldwide KFUO. For a contribution to the program, make your check payable to Law and Gospel and mail it to Pastor Tom Baker, Post Office Box 28910, St. Louis, Missouri 63132. You can call toll-free at 1-877-267-1962 or email lawandgospel at lawandgospel101.com. Views and opinions expressed on Worldwide KFUO may not represent the official position of the management or ownership of KFUO, the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. If you'd like to comment on programs or topics heard on Worldwide KFUO, write us at KFUO, 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can also leave a question or comment on our comment line at 314-996-1542. We are the messenger of good news, Worldwide KFUO.